On the string quartet tonight, on cello, Esme Gaze. On viola, Stella Page. And on violins, Antonia Pagelatis and Jyoti Osan.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobs Piers Broadsides, the July 26, 2007 edition, with a special report from Los Angeles and what's going on with the homeless in Skid Row and the famous Jones decision of the federal court that is supposed to protect them. Stay tuned. And that's Downtown David, one of our own street performers on Pacific Avenue. Haven't seen him performing in the last year or so, but I have seen him walking about, even sometimes carrying his guitar. Plenty of performers down there on Pacific Avenue. Don't be afraid of them. Don't be afraid to donate to them. They need it. With the E3 gone, that's about all you've got left in terms of spontaneous musical experience, unless you want to pay through the nose through some other established clubs. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrobs Piers Broadsides. That's the name of my show for the next 2 hours. Hoping to get a call from General Dogan down at LACAN, Los Angeles Community Action Network, which has been keeping an eye on, a very close eye and a close camera on the actions of the Los Angeles Police Department as they merrily violate the rights of thousands of homeless people who are supposed to be protected under the Jones decision of the federal court, which says you can't arrest homeless people at night in the large Skid Row area, which takes up many square blocks in downtown Los Angeles, due to the fact that there's shelter for less than 30,000, probably far less than 30,000, and there are more than 80,000 people involved, so obviously people don't have shelter. Can't get shelter, and you're criminalizing them for involuntary activities like sleeping, which it ain't permissible to do. Well, it's okay to do it in Santa Cruz. It's legal here, you see, because we know better. We know those people are really faking when they say they need to sleep at night. They can sleep during the day, as Judge Kangaroo Kelly put it back in 1997 in the trial of Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins after the last sleep out at City Hall, the last long sleep out at City Hall in 1996, which went on for about 8 months. And actually, it was more of a vigil. It was a vigil at City Hall, not really a sleep out, because Dan Hopkins tried to stay awake all night. He tried to follow the law, even as police officers led by Lieutenant Steve Clark would violate it by coming and grabbing people's blankets, confiscating them, arresting them, giving them citations for covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night, which is still a crime in Santa Cruz under Municipal Code 6.36010B. If you want more information on these laws, you can go to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. That's the website of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And it's got a listing of all the, or many of the downtown ordinances, and certainly many of the relevant sections of the camping ordinance, particularly the 6.36010 section, which includes the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and the camping ban, all of which are the target of civil rights activists in Santa Cruz for the last 3 weeks. I guess it'll be a fourth week this Sunday. We will be going to hang out at our table in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We may only be there for an hour because I think the Raging Grannies are going to do a concert, which is actually quite fine because they're trying to do a little raging against the war. And we at Huff also are concerned with the war on the poor and the war in Iraq. We call it the vigil against two wars. But we've been there specifically for the last 3 weeks, and we'll be there this next week also, and perhaps primarily because we're really focusing on this local issue, much as we'd like to see an end to the war in Iraq, and we'll keep encouraging local people, including our do-nothing city council, to do what it can about it. I should say not do-nothing. On Tuesday, they destroyed the E3 Playhouse, turning down the appeal for a permit, and rubber-stamped their bureaucracy without giving any kind of explanation as to why the bureaucrats' rules made any sense, which, of course, was the issue there, but that's another issue. Our question is, we know that the sleeping ban and the blanket ban and the ban on covering up with a survival tent when it's raining at night, cold and windy, is a constitutional violation. The federal courts know it. The United Nations knows it. Any sane person knows it. But unfortunately, sanity is not a necessary prerequisite for being in government these days. In fact, it's appropriate to be conventionally unsane if you're in government. Might even say insane, except insane gives the impression of people running around acting in a bizarre fashion that is, freaky in some obvious way. I mean, it is freaky to be arresting people or have laws that criminalize people at night, and that's what we're going to be protesting and encouraging people to sign up on a lawsuit against on Sunday. This coming Sunday, about 3 days off. That's going to be at 2 o'clock in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, 1520 Pacific Avenue. And there's going to be a bit of food, a bit of music, petitions, an opportunity to volunteer. And we're also going to be organizing for a bigger event on August 12th, which is happening at City Hall. We're going to be actually doing our normal event on Sunday. And then we will be sootling over to City Hall to lay down our sleeping bags and, look for a real legal place for people who are poor and homeless to sleep, and people who are housed will be there with them. Maybe we'll stay awake all night so we don't get arrested or ticketed. Maybe we'll fall asleep with them and get a ticket as well. But it's clearly a violation of the Constitution for homeless people to be ticketed for under this supposedly illegal camping law, actually an illegal sleeping law. It actually is very explicit. The law does not make any bones about it. And the actual wording of the law is pretty clear. I actually carry it around in my pocket. It is my constant companion, and it reads, "Sleeping. No person shall camp anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz, whether on public or private property, except as hereinafter expressly permitted. To camp means to do any of the following. A. Sleeping, 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. to sleep at any time between the hours of 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. in any of the following places. Outdoors, with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. 2. In, on, or under any structure not intended for human occupancy, whether with or without bedding, tent, hammock, or other similar protection or equipment. In, on, or under any parked vehicle, including an automobile, bus, truck, camper, trailer, or recreational vehicle. Point being, even if it's suitable for camping, if it had its own porta-potty or restroom with it, its own sanitation facilities, its own bed, that's still illegal, even though it's in your vehicle and you're legally parked. That's criminal behavior inside the city of Santa Cruz. And it's also criminal activity for to be in, on, or under any structure not intended for human occupancy. That means a residence. So if you are in a movie theater and you fall asleep after 11, you can get a $97 citation. Now, I haven't heard that happening recently, but it happened in a restaurant called Las Chorales regularly after the earthquake in 1989 when homeless people were being targeted by police and jail time Judith Beinert, a homeless activist who ran the cafe, which was next to the old Cinema 1 and 2 on Front Street, as you may remember, for those of you real old-timers. It's where the credit union is now, more or less. She let people sleep in there. She served them coffee, and sometimes they fell asleep, and the police chief at the time, Jack Black Badge Bassett, who's now a county employee of some kind, would raid the restaurant, give tickets, and arrest people, and take Judith and others to jail under the sleeping ban. Because you can be in a church. The year before, Bassett had sent his blue shirts in to arrest people for being inside a church at night sleeping. And in fact, the entire Interfaith Satellite Shelter program, that part of it, not the entire part of it, because some of it probably is outside the actual city limits, but all the ISSP program that is within the city limits, and that's the only walk-in emergency shelter program we have, and it's full. There's space for 40 people tonight out of 1,500 to 2,000. It itself is technically illegal under the same law. Of course, no one's ever taken it to court because who would want to deny people those meager spaces they have? But it's, in fact, illegal for the ISSP to operate because it doesn't have permits under that particular law. In fact, I don't think it's possible to get permits. It may be, actually, but it's not. I've never seen them, and they've never... The people who run the ISSP have never told me they have them. And as far as I know, I've never seen them anywhere publicly displayed at City Hall. They don't exist as far as I know. The entire ISSP program, then, I would venture, is itself illegal. And so really what we have is government by kind of a bunch of elite bureaucrats who make decisions in private, behind closed doors, and then give us the semblance of some kind of public comment. I don't even want to suggest there's anything like representative democracy, since I don't think any kind of opinions of the community are represented in this issue, either around the sleeping ban or around what happened again. I'm going to harken back to Tuesday night at City Council when Wes Anthony's E3 Playhouse was closed down for good, in spite of the overwhelming opinion of the community as far as the people who attended the City Council meeting, that was an abusive, counterproductive, discriminatory move. And you can read a lot more about that by going to the Santa Cruz Sentinel forums. The Sentinel itself had some pretty horrible articles by Shama Banana McCord, as I call her, the writer on that subject. But, you know, even Shanna herself recognized she had a kind of a little bit of sympathy crept into her writing. A little bit of, the absurdity of it all crept into writing. But in general, she quoted from the Planning Commission and Rotkin and the Police Department, and they're not following the rules, was what she was saying. Of course, there was no discussion of whether the rules were in any way reasonable, whether the rules were not, in fact, as Anthony had claimed, changed subsequent to his having committed himself to do this work, this, and which he did at the E3 Playhouse, whether, in fact, there was any damage done to the community, or whether, in fact, it wasn't almost 100% benefit, with the exception of two residents in the 1010 Pacific building who couldn't sleep at night or had some problems with that. And I'm not saying that their concern should be dismissed, but I'm saying that they have to be weighed. Everything has to be weighed. There was no such weighing process at City Council. It was all, we have these rigid rules laid down by the Planning Commission, which we are going to enforce, even though we, the City Council, and I'd like to be corrected if I'm wrong on this, have the power to overrule. They can grant the permit. They could have granted the permit with exceptions. It wasn't ruled out of order by the city attorney. It was voted down by the city council. When Tony Madrigal made a proposal that there be a six-month or a year interim permit get granted to Wes Anthony so that he could actually do his business, you know, it could be open during the day for the community activities and at night for they would make money essentially off the alcohol and the more moneyed crowd. He didn't even get a second, and instead he got the boot. Well, homeless people get the boot every night, and in a more serious way. I mean, Anthony, it's unfortunate that people can't dance and drink and eat and engage in, you know, listening to some good music or whatever kind of music. But it's even more abusive that the city maintains a positive hostility to basic human rights for poor and homeless people, claiming instead that if we grant them human rights here, then everybody will come to glory in our basic human rights. It's sort of like if we let them Negroes, you know, come to our side of town, we're going to get all kind of colored people from all over the place. You know, well, tough. Santa Cruz has a responsibility to its own people, for our own self-respect, to the Constitution, and it will hopefully turn out to the courts. Because in Los Angeles and San Diego, it is illegal, as well as being unconstitutional now, to arrest a homeless person or cite a homeless person for sleeping at night. And not even if you can offer him shelter. That's no longer an option. That used to be the kind of the out the police would use in Miami when there was a similar court decision back in the late 90s called the Pottinger Settlement that came down. They used to say, well, we got a shelter bed here, so take the shelter bed or go to jail. They can't do that in Los Angeles because they obviously don't have shelter beds for 50,000 homeless people. And in Santa Cruz, with space for 40 tonight out of 1,500 to 2,000, they obviously don't have shelter for the people to offer them. So every time a police officer comes up to you and says, I'm writing you a ticket for those who are homeless and listening, although I don't know how many people have radios, or if you happen to know a homeless person you want to advise them, you should ask the police officer, does she or he know that there is no shelter for homeless people tonight? They just ask the police officer, where do I go for shelter? When the police officer says, well, you know, you can go to the homeless service center. They have an emergency shelter program. You can say, well, do you know if it's open this time of night? Can you actually direct me there now? And the answer, of course, is, well, it's not my problem. But the point is you inform the police officer of the shelter emergency, which has been officially declared in Santa Cruz, 1990 and renewed in 95. Actually, it was simply reemphasized in 95. It had never gone away, and it was simply reemphasized. And in 98. And I think it may have been even done again. But there at least are three concurrent shelter emergencies that the city is operating under, and yet instead of more shelter or a lessening of the law or campgrounds or car parks where people can park their vehicles, parking lots where people can go. And there are plenty of parking lots at night that are vacant. Of course, you're not even allowed to walk into them now because of the ordinances of the city council as pushed by Vice Mayor Ryan Coonerty, in front of whose bookshop, as I mentioned before, at 2 o'clock on Sunday, we're going to be protesting and hopefully in a pleasant and enjoyable way and sort of inviting old Ryan Coonerty, or I should say young Ryan Coonerty, to come on out and give us his lawyerly opinion. He's a lawyer, as to why he somehow feels that these anti-homeless laws, which he's voted for and pushed for and now supports, are something that we should support or something that we can understand why he supports them. Call-in number to the studio here is 427-3772. And my promised call from L.A. Ken has not come through. I think it occasionally happens, in fact, more frequently than I'd like. I did talk to General Dogan earlier, who's an activist in Los Angeles. I actually talked to him twice today. He called me, and I called him, and he called me. We talked several times. In fact, I think what I'll do is I'll give you his report, which might be an appropriate thing to do. If I can find the thing. And I will hope that maybe sometime in the course of the next couple hours he will be calling in. You, however, can call in, and that won't stop him from calling since we have a second line. The number that you listeners locally or possibly internationally. Who knows? We get the occasional German listener, and we've had listeners from elsewhere, too. 427-3772. Get your pencils if you want to write down the number, or just cock your ear closer to the radio or your computer. 831-427-3772. 427-FRSC. We are indeed Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Here's a report from General Dogan down south. There's a thing that they have down there that's called the Safer Cities Initiative. I've actually talked about it. It's similar to the Bates, that's Mayor Bates of Berkeley's Public Commons for Everyone but the Homeless Initiative. He doesn't usually include the last two words, but those who read it carefully know that's what it's all about. They're attempting to move people away from buildings, make it illegal to sit or lie in districts at certain times and places, intensify police harassment downtown. Again, all with the idea of driving homeless people away, using stereotypes like they are drug abusers, they're alcoholics, you know, they're mentally ill, they need to be out, they're a business detriment. All this can be very true of a particular person at a particular time, and maybe true for a number of people, and is true, no question about it. But these are also human beings without shelter who are engaging in no illegal activity until such time as the Santa Cruz Police Department and the Santa Cruz City Council made it illegal for them to sleep. And then, of course, they become criminals every night. And that's what we're going to be talking about, doing some skits, perhaps, a sort of a mock debate with Vice Mayor Ryan Coonerty. We've invited him to come on out, and I'm going to call him again and invite him to come on out and talk to us. He's a little too busy. He's a little busy working. He's busy perhaps considering running for higher office. He's considering the Assemblyman Laird's seat, if Assemblyman Laird is term limited out. He's our assemblyman, our state assemblyman. It's kind of interesting. Laird himself was a mayor in Santa Cruz, and he himself was a big supporter of the sleeping ban. These are the great liberals who will stand up for gay rights of upper middle class people, but they have a real problem when it comes to poor people because, it's the brie and cheese set, and the bigotry is even deeper than that. There are people who are lower middle class who are afraid of losing the status they're in, and who, you know, see themselves. They comfort themselves that they're better than the homeless people because they're indoors. And by God, if they made it, those homeless people can make it. And if only they worked a little harder, then that would be that. And if they can't, well, they can't afford to live when they get out of town. That's the general perspective that I've heard on this show and on other shows. It's kind of a mythology because you can't get out of every town, and it's happening everywhere. The housing situation is impossible across the country in every major city. And to call it a drug abuse problem or a mental illness problem is hogwash. It's just not true. These are problems, and they could certainly be dealt with better than by the drug war or by all kinds of ineffectual drug and shock and incarceration therapies that we have pumped millions upon billions of dollars into. But while we're doing a war in Iraq, we're not going to find any alternatives to this. I don't see us. I think the community has to find its own alternatives, but I don't see money being available. It's all being eaten up by this huge monster of the war. Anyway, Los Angeles, General Dogan. I don't know if he's an actual general or just a general nuisance or kind of that's his nickname. Sounds like an African-American guy I talked to. He says there's a huge increase in arrests. There's over 9,300 arrests, additional tickets, then 10,000 tickets. They've opened up a ticket defense clinic down there with 90% success rate in dismissing infraction citations. And I think we need to establish some sort of clinic here that does the same, because not only do people get tickets for sleeping outside when they have no choice, they get tickets for acting like an adult in public if they, for example, are in a secluded spot and they try to drink a beer without being intoxicated or abusive or littering. They get a citation when Ranger Wallace and his green brigade go running through in search of tents to slash and remove in the Poganip, or the new CSO squad, that's community service officers, under Sergeant Warren Berry, which go along with the Chief Wallace, Chief Ranger Wallace's expeditions, writing tickets. They go after offenses other than sleeping. There's, you know, there's one guy got a ticket for leaning his bicycle against a tree. It's kind of hard to figure out that, how that one went. You get they can get tickets, as in Los Angeles, I hear they're getting a ticket for if your ash drops on the sidewalk, that's considered littering. We know of one man who's been on the air a number of times, Shane, who got a ticket for, first he thought it was because he had his bunny Fluffy with him, rabbit food, two pellets of rabbit food on the sidewalk in front of a cookie company, who really wanted him to move because they didn't like him and his rabbit being in front of the store, although he was legally permitted to be there. There are plenty of stores I'd like to see move the hell out of town, but do I tell them to do that? Do I demand they do that? Do I start organizing vigilante squads to drive them out of town? Or start arresting and harassing them at every turn? No, I don't. And it's not just because I can't. It's because I think we all have a right. In fact, it's an important thing that we all be able to live here together. But when one group begins lording it over another, you have a form of tyranny. You have a form of abuse. You have a form, and it creates class war. Class war is something that we are in the middle of. It's not something that I think people have honestly want to do, but it's something they're forced to pick up weapons in defense. And the different weapons are legal weapons, they're moral weapons, and I guess if you're being physically assaulted, there are physical weapons. You know, there are all kinds of weapons you need when you're being you're told you just don't have a right to exist. So, anyway, as I said, getting back to General Dogan, here in Santa Cruz, this guy Shane got a citation for littering. And the litter, when he finally got the ticket many months later and went to court, he found it was for having a laptop on the sidewalk. That was considered to be litter. And that case has yet to go to court, as I understand it, for a final disposition. We'll see what happens there. He had initially been told it was for the two pellets of bunny food. Fluffy's lunch apparently was considered to be unsightly, or at least a good pretext for writing a citation, which most people find quite intimidating. You know, you have to go to court. It's anywhere from $90 to a $200 fine, or $25 to a $125 community service fee. If you want to do community service and get a failure to appear, the fine goes up big time. And if you don't pay it, it goes up again. It can go up to $900, as was the case, nearly the case for Craig Canada, who was able to take his tickets with the help of Huff and the Human Rights Organization to trial, where with an attorney's advice, although the judge refused to appoint an attorney for him, even though she should have, he had the tickets dismissed because he was a medical marijuana patient, and there's no place where a medical marijuana patient can go to sleep legally at night in Santa Cruz, even inside the shelter programs. And, of course, there's no place in the shelter programs for 95% of homeless people anyway, so it's kind of a secondary issue anyway. Again, getting back to Los Angeles and what I was told by General Dogan, they're giving tickets out for jaywalking, for littering, for ashes falling on the sidewalk. And also a bunch of guys and presumably men and women on parole and probation are also now being targeted. You can only get 6 months to a year if they pick you up for a parole or probation violation, which can be something like sleeping on the sidewalk, or could have been before the Jones decision in Los Angeles. People who are busted for that are coming back, so police officers are ramping in L.A. Skid Row, are ramping up enforcement, according to this report, to, again, demand if a person is on parole or probation. But you're not supposed to do that unless the person is suspected of a crime. You don't just run around asking people, as you may have seen on Pacific Avenue. They're doing that as well. If a person is on parole or probation, unless you have other reasons to suspect them, just sort of pretending that you're a police officer and can order people around, I guess you don't have to pretend you're a police officer. There are plenty of real police officers around, too many, doing this kind of thing anyway. Well, you can't use pretended offenses or engage in this kind of behavior. Of course, if people agree to it, you can do just about anything, and that is one of the problems. People do not want to say to a police officer, "Officer, are you investigating a crime? And if not, I'll be on my way. You know, am I free to go?" Is sort of the magic words that the Free Schools Know Your Rights seminars give out, and I commend them for it, and you should check out the Free School on that issue. That's Free School, S-K-O-O-L, for those of you who have computers. And for those of you who don't, come to the HUF meeting, and we'll talk more about that. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we meet every Wednesday from 9:30 to 11:30 at the County Building, right outside the coffee cart area, right next to the coffee cart area, actually, right outside the court area where you walk through the metal detector. That's, again, 9:30 to 11:30 on Wednesday mornings. And you can probably get some tips also from the three musical events that go on. Musical events that also have some food and awesome company. Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, SAFE, as they call themselves. I like to think of them as street performers against foolish enforcement. Concerned about taking back public spaces that are being stolen by merchants and police and bureaucrats from the Parks and Rec Department as they close off vast areas along the river, as they send more and more police tromping through the Poganip to deny people, even who are trying to hide, the right to survive. Taking back public space, taking back the public commons is really, I think, what it's about here, and I hope we do it. In L.A., Dogan is talking about taking back the public commons. There's apparently the authorities down there are nervous because people are coming back to Skid Row because it's the only legal place to sleep in Los Angeles if you're homeless. Under the Jones decision, it's legal to sleep there at night anyway. And the minute people, the media mentions that there are more homeless people there, the police start ramping things up. This is the green light to release the dogs, to use his metaphor, and make a lot of arrests. Night before last, there was a big raid at St. Julian and Gladys Streets, he says. A couple of nights before that, they came out and were harassing people, folks in their tent, because people are allowed tents down there in Los Angeles, were hanging out. 15 cars pulled up on the street, went into their tents, and demanded no RU on probation or parole, even though there is an injunction against doing this. And increasingly, in some major cities we've had, those of us concerned with restoring civil rights for poor people, some successful injunctions. Like in Fresno, there's the Kincaid injunction, named after, I think it's Pamela Kincaid, who is actually now in a hospital in serious condition. She was beaten, and there's a question as to whether she was beaten by people connected with the police or by other homeless people in a private dispute. I'm trying to get more information about that. But the Kincaid decision was that you can't take homeless property, as our own Ranger Wallace does, and destroy it. Even if you've left a note that you're going to do so, you have to store it for up to 30, perhaps 60 days. And give people a chance to reclaim it if you claim they're engaging in illegal behavior, such as, you know, trying to survive in a city that doesn't want you to be there, even though it's a public area and there's a thing called the Constitution, which they prefer not to pay much attention to, or only to pay attention to it for upper middle class people wanting to make speeches, like myself. The Fitzgerald injunction in Los Angeles is an injunction that says you can't stop people for no cause in Skid Row simply because you want to determine, for example, if they're on parole or probation, because that might give you a chance to start to sort of check them for violations. You have to have some crime you see them committing, or someone has to come up to you and want to make a citizen's arrest of that person by saying, I saw this person engaging in this or that crime. And then you can then detain the person and demand, you can attempt to interrogate them. They can choose to remain silent. And you can identify them as far as warrants go. And if you find warrants, you can then haul them in, which is what LA is doing a lot of. They're giving people citations. They're hauling them in. And the citations, according to this, are being 90% of them dismissed, but they're doing the same thing. It's sort of a social cleansing operation, where cleansing is sort of like, you know, ethnic cleansing. It's not really very clean. It's pretty dirty stuff. So the ACLU filed suit against the Central Division in Los Angeles. The court agreed they were using the pretext of probation or parole. So they have an injunction. They had an injunction on them for 9 months. It's now been extended for 6 more months against the police department in L.A. But officers are either not informed about it or not responding to it. So there's a problem. He goes out, this guy does, with L.A. Can, and does what they call, what I call cop watch, which, of course, is to keep an eye on the police, see what they do, photograph them, bring back documentary evidence that again, can then be used to show that police are engaging in violations of the law, to which I mean the orders of the court, which have the force of law, and our law, given the lawless kind of behavior that the L.A. police are engaging in. He noted that 2 to 3 weeks ago, his cameraman was observing and reporting on cops jacking up someone for drinking a beer, which I guess, I don't know, I'm not sure what their open container law is like. It seemed to indicate it, they have a different law down there on that regard. But I hope we can get him to give a call in, but I suspect he may have gone to another meeting because he has other meetings to go to. That being the case, I'm going to now turn to a little music, and you're going to get a respite from my voice for a bit, and you can perhaps we can hear your voices out there if you feel like calling in. The number is 427-3772. I'll be doing some updates on the both medical marijuana and recreational marijuana fronts locally. You may recall we actually had two advocates in the studio who didn't get along very well, Craig Canada and Anita Henry last time, and I think a lot of that was, well, it had to do with the fact that it's Craig's a sensitive guy with a disability, Anita's an outspoken woman, and there was a significant clash, which those of you who were listening on Sunday heard. But these are both people of great intelligence, as far as I'm concerned, and have taken a lot of hard knocks, each individually. And Anita's housed, and Craig is not. And they're both trying to advocate for the right to, they're fighting the drug war, actually it's the war on people that masquerades as a drug war. And they're also fighting to restore the right to medicate, to use marijuana, both recreationally and medicinally in Santa Cruz. And I would probably suggest, probably, I'm not sure, I wouldn't speak for them, but I would hope they're also fighting for the right to just dump this whole drug war stupidity, which has been going on for 40 years and does nobody any good, except, I guess, police department funding. And, I don't know, people who profit from this huge black market.
Body in the morning light. I'm outside the 7-Eleven talking with
Chris.
And Chris, you say you had you and your bicycle had an encounter with Sergeant Barry yesterday?
Yeah.
What was that all about?
My bike being up against the tree.
So your bike was having unlawful congress with a tree?
Apparently.
And it was your bike, what did your bike have to say about this, your bike over there?
Yeah.
Looks like a relatively well-behaved bike. It's leaning now against a building. So it says no loitering, no trespassing. That's violating two ordinances. There's no open alcohol, apparently. And customer parking. Is your bike truly a customer, or is you're a customer? You're a friend of the bike?
I'm the owner of the bike.
You're the owner of the bike. So what did Sergeant Barry say to you when he came up to what were you doing when Sergeant Barry approached you? And where was this?
It was over at the Triangle Park. I was sleeping, and when he approached, he woke me up and asked me whose bike it was, and I said it was mine. He goes, "Why is it leaning up against the tree?" I said, "Well, there's no bike racks out here." So he gave me a ticket for non-authorized parking of my bike.
Do you have a copy of that citation with you? I'd like to see that code section, not because I know anything about it, but because it sounds like a pretty opportunistic ticket. Have you had anything to do with Sergeant Barry in the past?
Yeah, I have.
Do you think this may have had something to do with that?
Possibly.
What was your previous experience with him?
It was over going down the one-way ramp to the Church Street parking lot.
And you were doing that on a bicycle? Or?
Yep.
Was this, were cars dodging you and honking wildly?
No.
What time of day or night was this when this happened?
It was about 2:30 in the morning.
So actually it was pretty safe to do it then?
Yeah.
And what did Sergeant Barry say to you at that time?
He didn't let me off with a warning, told me not to do it again.
I see. Okay, this is looking at your ticket. And it's a yellow citation. 10.68, bike parking something something. And again, it's dated yesterday about 2:40 in the afternoon. I would advise you to, depends how much time you want to take on this ticket, but I advise everyone to disqualify referee Basket, who's where these things usually go. She's in the basement. She's Mulligan's replacement. And she's been around for quite a while now. You essentially write a little note when you go to the counter of the county of the building of the basement in the bottom, when you go to the window to make to find out what's going on, and you tell them you want to disqualify the referee, and you have to write out a a little letter that says, this is my case number, this is my name, I declare under penalty of perjury because I believe it to be true that she's prejudiced. You say, I don't like, you know, I want a new judge. You have a right to one disqualification. And the only thing you have to remember is you have to cite 170.6 CCP, which I can write down for you. But the downside to this is you have to go to another court rather than going, you get another day. You have to essentially have to go twice. You go to disqualify, and then you go to the court for the arraignment. And then if you plead not guilty, you go for the trial. Half the time the cops don't show up, but I don't know. You know, the cops are doing their silly crackdown shit, so it's hard to say whether they're going to show up or not.
Nope, I know that one.
Sorry about all this. May you and your bike have good health. Anything else happening you want to talk about?
Yeah, they need to start focusing on people that, you know, have jobs, cars, you know, that actually pay taxes, that do violate the law in front of them, and they don't do nothing about it.
So an example of that would be?
People running stop signs, people not giving the right-of-way to pedestrians on the sidewalks.
You've observed this happen recently?
Oh, yeah, I've been observing it a lot of times since I've been here. I've been here for 4 years. I've seen people where they had to literally go out in the street just to, you know, avoid of being hit and being placed in danger again.
Cool. I wish that were the case myself. That is to say, I wish that they were those laws were enforced, or at least that behavior was deterred one way or another. We've been talking with
Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
And, of course, that was a little music at the wrong speed. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is your radio station. If you want to call in, you can. I actually got a call during that show from L.A. Ken, and it wasn't from General Dogan. It was from another person working there. Levita said that the general will be calling in on Sunday. Of course, I didn't tell her I've heard that one before, but hopefully it'll be the case, and maybe we'll be able to get an update from L.A. They're apparently very busy down there. And I can believe it, what with the LAPD on the rampage and the city engaging in a massive gentrification, because that's really what it's all about. I think they're trying to drive people out of a particular area in Los Angeles because there is one of those, you know, high-rent districts going in, and they just can't have the riffraff in the high-rent district. Again, I don't have the details right now, but hopefully I'll get some of the details on Sunday. In Berkeley, I checked the interesting online paper, which is also a free paper. You can get it on a news rack on corners of the Berkeley streets, called the Berkeley Daily Planet. There's a story, actually it's kind of a commentary there, Street Spirit Vendors Deserve Respect. This is from the Berkeley Daily Planet, July 24th, by Susan Chatson, and this is written to Mayor Tom Bates. I was very disappointed to hear something you said on the Sunday show on KPFA this Sunday, July 22nd. You said that when you see a street spirit vendor at the Berkeley Bowl, you often cut through the parking lot to avoid him. You use this personal revelation to illustrate that some members of the public feel uncomfortable around the homeless and that this discomfort can hurt business in Berkeley. Your personal example followed a more vehement statement about the homeless, or you clarified not so much the homeless as mentally ill and drug-addicted street people who have, quote, incredible street behavior. The host clarified that you meant incredibly poor street behavior. There were so many insensitivities in these few lines that I hesitate to break them down at all, but I support Street Spirit, which is a homeless newspaper, which is also sold on the streets of Santa Cruz, I interject, and buy it whenever I can. I want you to acknowledge publicly that this publication is part of the solution, not part of the problem. I think that any comment by an elected official that condones people avoiding street spirit vendors is reprehensible. This project combines self-expression, honorable work, and increased resources going towards meeting homeless people's needs. I have found street spirit vendors hardly ever to be aggressive or obnoxious. It is passers-by's choice whether to purchase the paper or not. I admit that your discomfort with the homeless and that of many people in our community stems more from guilt and projection than from any bad behavior on the part of these citizens. We know that there but for fortune go you or I. We fear the calamity that could pluck us from our comfortable, seemingly secure lives and drop us down in front of a supermarket dependent on the generosity of strangers. We wonder if we are doing all we can to change the world so that human need would come before corporate greed. And we imagine the resentment, anger, and loathing that we would feel if we were ever in their shoes to see prosperous, uncaring neighbors pass by without even acknowledging our humanity. It is these truths that Street Spirit narrates, and for these reasons we should all subscribe. Or if you can't subscribe, check it out at the library and buy a copy from a homeless person on your block. But you are correct. That's my addition. The article slash letter continues, and this is a letter to Mayor Tom Bates of Berkeley. But you are correct on one count. There are many others who feel as you do. I sometimes wish I did not have to interact with homeless people, but I have made a decision. If a homeless man or woman can face me and ask for help, I owe it to them to give as often as I can. I work for a day when homelessness is erased. I like living in Berkeley because, as you also noticed with paternalistic pride, we do more for the homeless than most other cities. But this problem is all of ours, not just an issue for people who are currently at the forefront of the struggle. Until you see yourself in the homeless Street Spirit vendor and respect him or her as doing a necessary job, all of us will be poorer, and your efforts to help the homeless will lack the heart it takes to interact with respect and integrity. It's by Susan Chasson, 724 issue of the Berkeley Daily Planet. And who knows how Tom Bates will respond. His response thus far has been more anti-homeless laws, and it's always kind of a hoot to try to get politicians, to treat politicians as though they were people. I mean, it's really hard to do. I mean, it doesn't mean you should dehumanize politicians, but you've got to really strip away the mask from their bullshit. And that's one of the things, as I said, we'll be trying to do with Ryan Coonerty, the vice mayor and one of the big workers of the family business, the Bookshop Santa Cruz, this Sunday at 2 o'clock. Come on down, join us. And we'll be preparing for activities on August 12th. And there'll be sleep out and a whole bunch of, we hope, a whole bunch of events. We're not sure how far we're going to go with it. But the point is to make it clear that the homeless community has a right to gather safely, to sleep safely, and not to be harassed, ticketed, cited, or arrested for doing what they need to do. What they need to do. So, think about that. And if you can't come down, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and ask, what can I do? And I'll give you something to do. I'll suggest some things, ranging from letters to being a court observer to doing some graphics, you name it, what your skills are, and I'll suggest something you might want to do. 423-4833. If you want to call the studio and talk about anything that's come up in the last week that you've seen, thoughts you've had around any of these issues, or breaking news of any kind on the Santa Cruz scene, give me a call at the studio line here, 427-3772. And while I'm waiting for this flood of calls to come in, I think we are going to turn to a street interview. So, here we go.
Sure, why not?
I want off the street.
Hey, hear you. What's your name?
I've been here for a year and 3 months.
And how are you treated by people on the street?
I'm from Arkansas.
And in Santa Cruz? Here, how long?
Pardon me?
How long here in Santa Cruz?
I've been here for a year and 3 months.
And are you indoors or outdoors at night?
No, I'm living in an RV. Yeah. I've got 2 kids.
Right.
I'm disabled.
Right.
And I'd like to be able to get housing, but I can't. And they won't even give me an application when I go up to the Swift Street office.
What do they say to you when you go up there?
I haven't tried very many other programs yet, but it's been really hard finding people to assist me.
Now, you've been ticketed for sleeping in a vehicle because that's illegal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten a citation or they ignore you?
Not yet, but I want to. So,
you don't want a ticket for sleeping in a vehicle.
Pardon me?
You don't want to get cited. You haven't been hassled for sleeping in a car?
I want to, you know. I'm not trying to make a lifestyle out of being homeless.
No,
I don't want to.
But you don't want a policeman to give you a ticket for sleeping in your car.
Yes, I have been. I've been harassed several times for sleeping in my RV.
All right.
I don't sleep in my truck. I sleep in an RV, and it's really, really hard finding a place to park without being harassed. We got to get up like about 5 o'clock in the morning to be able to avoid the police. coming and waking us up in the morning.
Have you got any tickets recently?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do about those tickets?
What did he ask me?
What are you going to do about the tickets?
About the ticket, I'm paying them off.
And how much? When was the last time you paid one off?
They gave me $1,100 worth of tickets for parking in a handicap parking zone with handicap tags. I got 4 tickets right there across the street over here at Elm Street. 6 of them I didn't even know I had until I went up there to go start paying them off. And we went to go get the tags renewed on the RV handicap tag. And we got our stickers and everything because we're paying off the tickets. And I'm down to $443 on it right now. And somebody stole my tags off the back of my truck. And I'm having a hard time getting my tags.
Any tickets under the sleeping ban? You know about the sleeping ban? The law that makes it illegal to sleep in your car and your vehicle? Have you gotten a ticket for that?
Oh my gosh.
You
know, I can't explain that.
Right. And have you gotten a ticket for that?
Uh-huh.
They said to you can't sleep at night and here's a ticket for it.
Okay.
Have they ever given you a ticket?
I haven't gotten a ticket for sleeping.
Good.
Yet.
Yeah.
I've been really lucky.
Good.
They've been threatening to give me one for a while, so I've been really lucky. I've been able to avoid it. You know, I haven't gotten a ticket for illegal camping or nothing yet, so I've just got parking tickets. Mm-hmm. And that's my major problem.
Would you like to join a lawsuit that says that they can't ticket you for that? We're trying to get a lawsuit together that says stop them from doing that.
Yes, I would.
Well, here, let me give you a card to call them up. We're trying to get people together to do that. If I can find the darn card.
Find a card. There you go.
There's a card.
Okay.
And we've been talking with. What's your
good
name?
Good to see you again, Robert.
Hey, I forgot your name.
Oh, Shelly-Ann. Pleasure to meet you, dude.
It's a pleasure.
Excuse me, Robert.
Sure.
Why don't you tell her how many times you tried to sue the city?
This is the first time we've actually done a lawsuit
on
this particular issue.
I know, we've all got problems with being homeless, and they're all
We actually have successfully sued the city for other things, though, in answer to his question.
I have a friend that got a ticket for laying down over there in front of the Metro one day.
Yeah?
He just stretched out, you know, in a crazy type way, and then the police officer on the bicycle came over there and looked down at him and said, I'm giving you a ticket for that. And I was like, he's not even asleep or nothing, you know?
It's illegal to lie down downtown on any sidewalk.
He laid down prone on the ground.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
I don't understand that.
They don't want to have people hanging around or lying around or standing around.
Whatever happened to the pursuit of happiness?
Well, or the Constitution, for that matter, you know.
Isn't that in our constitutional right? Isn't that in our Bill of Rights?
I think so, but until people stand up for their rights, they don't mean anything. See, that's the point. So that's the problem.
That's right.
People are, you know, afraid to stand up for their rights, or they, you know.
Well, it's hard to do.
We
do what we want without being harassed by the officials, you know? I mean.
And also, people are divided from each other. They like to fight each other rather than fight the authority.
You can't sit on the curb and not do nothing. That's un-American.
Right.
You know? That's not right.
Well, you know, you might, because you're a woman and because you have to live in your vehicle, you might be a good person for this lawsuit. So far we have 15 people that are interested, and we don't know how many people are actually going to do it. And we're still trying to, we have to raise the money to do it, so you know, that depends whether we get the money together. But if you're interested, you got a phone number and so forth we can take down, and contact point, let me give you a, write it down if you want.
We're talking with Michael.
Michael, what happened?
We had three tents set up in the Pogo Nip between 9 and the railroad tracks. And in the morning, the four of us, we leave camp, go downtown for the day. During the day, the rangers came by. They put a notice on the date, a 3-day warning, and they collapsed two of the tents as a message to get out of there.
Collapsed them, you mean made them inoperable or just gently set them down?
They just pulled the stakes. It wasn't anything vicious. They didn't
destroy it.
Okay. Yeah, they're still usable. But they left the notice. We didn't have any, no campfire. We pack all our trash every morning. And they said 3 days, but this morning we woke up and we're all at each other's throats because we wrapped up our tents and, you know,
moving on, but it's just a real bummer because I've heard they give a 3-day notice but come back the next day and ticket them. So they're...
You don't want to lose your tents.
No, certainly.
And, your property.
Yeah, our property, yeah. Completely. And, you know, we're always quiet, no fires, you know, it's safe. I'm surprised they wouldn't want more people up there to help prevent forest fires.
Well, remember, only you can prevent forest fires.
Completely, but if someone were careless and started one, I'm sure as hell would be out there trying to help put it out before it came to ruin my position.
Protest 2 o'clock on Sunday in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. We'll be doing our thing again, signing up people. I know you already have signed up for the lawsuit. So.
And I've been passing out a lot of flyers.
Cool.
Yeah. Definitely. How's it going today?
Well, I'm just wandering around getting usual accounts for everybody and his mother.
Yep. This is my campmate, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
All right, man. How you doing?
All right.
Yeah, be sure. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right.
I'm wearing a T-shirt with George Bush having a bite out of the Statue of Liberty.
And these interviews happened at the Elm Street sidewalk in front of the Elm Street Mission, right across from the only parking lot where it's illegal for a homeless person to walk through, or anybody to walk through for that matter, but it is the parking lot across from the main homeless event and the only parking lot that was included in that illegal status. Other parking lots were, they decided it wouldn't be a good idea to make it illegal to walk into those lots, but this one they decided it would be, unless you are parking your vehicle, and then you can only be there for 15 minutes, vehicle or bike for that matter. After that, get out of your car and leave, or else you are up for a probably $100 to $200 citation. I think it's not that they're issuing a lot of citations, it's that they are contracting the public space, making people afraid of using the public space in traditional Santa Cruz ways, you know, talking, chatting, lingering, reading a book. These are becoming illegal activities in... Well, they have become illegal in parking garages and in parking lot number 9, as it's called, across from the Elm Street Mission. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Again, the call-in number 427-3772.
And your name?
Natalie.
Natalie, are you part of this camping group?
No.
You have your own sleeping bag campsite?
Yeah.
And how long have you been outside?
Like a month.
No hassles?
No, not yet, thank God.
Deeply concealed or
yeah.
Just lucky?
I think a little bit of both.
Okay. Well, keep us advised, and if you get hassled, give a call or let other people know if you want to phone in any reports. There's not much we can do except publicize it.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I'll definitely get back to you.
We're also working on this lawsuit, so we'll see what happens with that.
Okay.
Neil Thompson.
And Neil, what's happened?
I was in the park and I discreetly put my beer inside of a Mountain Dew bottle so it wouldn't be obvious, it wouldn't be offending anybody or anything. And unfortunately, somebody else I went over to talk to, they reached into their bag and they pulled out a steel can and they took a sip off the steel can and then took and the cop came from nowhere and started writing them a ticket.
Which park?
It's MR or.
It begins with MR Avenue?
It's MR Park.
It's up on the west side?
I believe so. And so during that period of time, I didn't move. He said, nobody move. And so I just took and I sat there, and I didn't think I was worried about it. And he took and apparently looked at the Mountain Dew bottle with the beer in it. And, I mean, he never got within 5 feet of the bottle, never touched the bottle, never smelled the bottle, but wrote me out a ticket and said, here, sign this. And I got an open container.
How long ago was this?
2 days ago.
During the day?
Yeah.
How many people were around you when this all happened?
Three, four.
Were you rioting, throwing stones, creating a disturbance?
Nope, no.
Had known the name of the cop?
Nope. I have the ticket somewhere. Okay. Where do I have the ticket?
My suggestion of running these tickets is, if you're going to be around, you want to deal with it, disqualify the referee basket. She's the person in the basement. You don't want her to go to another court. Come to a Huff meeting after you pled not guilty in the other court. And you do that by filing what's called a 170.6 CCP motion, which says, I want to disqualify the referee.
Okay, one. You guys going to eat tonight?
Yes. Thank you very much.
And then you contact Huff's on the other side, and we'll talk to you. We haven't got a lawyer, but we can show you how to deal with that.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's not much. I mean, you got to do all the work yourself.
No, I greatly appreciate the help.
Seriously. Okay. Any tickets? I've got questions about
I got a good one, but I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
A long time ago.
Okay, but nothing recent, then?
No.
Okay.
This was in Bakersfield, too, so.
Yeah, well, another time. We'll talk about it. I'm just working on the local stuff, but, you know.
Okay.
Love your T-shirt, man. Hey, thank you.
I got one on a bicycle ticket.
What'd you get? Tell me about it, man. What's your first name?
My name's William Hatt.
Go ahead, William.
I was coming down Pacific, you know, and they had that construction there where that wooden shed sticks out halfway over the highway, and it goes one way there. Uh-huh. And I missed that one-way sign because of that building, and there's three blocks of one-way street, then it goes two-way again, and they give you a ride on a one-way street. A little three-box section now, and they give me a ticket on it.
Yeah, and what have you done with that ticket? You going to pay it? You going to let it go? You going to go to trial? What do you plan?
I'll probably pay the fine. You know, that's how I can do about it.
Some dollars.
Huh?
Hundred and some dollars.
Oh, God. Well, I'll try to community service.
Community service and get in touch with PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, and you can do some work for civil rights groups.
Okay, I'll try doing that. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Sorry about that.
Yep. Little three-block section turns one way because of construction there, say.
You're sleeping outside tonight?
I won't say anything.
No problem. You criminal, you.
Yeah,
I can tell what's going on here.
You're talking with B.A.R. Barr.
Hey, Barr.
The only thing I have to say at this time is that the police don't own the streets anymore. All the people that love living free and helping one another out in the spirit of love, too. And they need to get that because their fascist time is almost over with. Thank you. Have a beautiful life.
Thank you, Barr.
Situation.
Go ahead. Your name, sir?
My name is Joe.
Go ahead, Joe.
That illegal camping ticket situation is sort of... it should be illegal to live.
Illegal breathing.
Illegal breathing, yes. And so, you know, there should be something done about that. You know, as long as you don't create a bad situation, then, you know, why?
It's a necessity to sleep.
Right.
Yeah,
and so,
definitely.
You know.
But we're trying to do this lawsuit, and if you want to be a part of it, I'll give you a phone number to call, or you can come down. We're doing a protest at 2 o'clock on Sunday in front of Coonerty's Bookstore, Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Right.
And, you know, we're signing people up and stuff for a lawsuit.
Right on, yeah. So that sounds great, yes.
I understand the law has been strict on by the courts in six or seven communities, and they're still enforcing it in other communities.
Because they're so concerned, they want to keep doing it until they absolutely have to stop with us. They don't believe we have the resources to go after them, and we don't yet. Because it costs $10,000. We have 4,000, and we're trying to get it together. But, you know, I think we may get it because the attorneys can get back the money.
The president is on your side here, obviously.
At the moment. They could always go back, you know, because the Supreme Court sucks, you know. And so,
that's true.
You know, but nonetheless, it's precedent. It's the Jones decision from Los Angeles. It says, don't arrest people at night for sleeping because you've got a place for them to go.
Well, five or six cities have
well,
been...
I know of San Diego,
Arcata, California, lost a lawsuit about it, too. I read a thing in the paper about it.
I know Arcata's lost lawsuits. I don't know if it has on that particular... Mm-hmm. I know that Tad up there did a couple of lawsuits. I don't know about specifically about that. But I know that the largest city in the state, Los Angeles, is told, don't arrest people for sleeping. What in fuck is Santa Cruz doing?
Yeah.
Ticketing people for sleeping, and the answer is they don't give a shit until people make them. And I think we need to have big sleepouts. I mean, we need to have bunches of people sleeping out and saying, good, arrest me if we have to, and I'll be there with people getting arrested and saying, you know, good, we'll go to jail, but, you know, you eventually have to pay restitution for this because you're acting illegally or unconstitutionally. You got a law, but the law is wrong.
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
So that's what I'm going to be talking about doing, and it's easy for people. Person is indoors. I'm indoors to talk about
it. I am too, but I was out there last year. I had a camping ticket.
Yeah. Well, and you might be outdoors again. You never know when next turn of the wheel. And there you go. You know. So, again, your first name?
Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Thanks. Nice talking to you.
All right. Talking with. Tickets? I don't pay no stinking tickets.
No,
I go
talking.
To jail. Fuck it.
All right, man.
Well,
there you are.
Uncle Villa, fuck it, man.
Hey, Poncho, thank you.
Hey, George. What's happening?
I was with the lead singer, band Great White.
Right, we're talking about tickets to Santa Cruz, man. That's the subject.
Okay, I got a ticket.
Recently? The one we've already talked about?
Another one.
Okay, what was that about?
Something about trash up in SoCal.
Yeah.
And part of the trust is not mine. I have to go to court.
Talk about it with you. You'll be at the safe event tonight, or you're going to come to the safe thing tonight?
I will.
I will probably be there. If not, I'll try to talk to you about some other point. I'm going to catch people before they go inside.
Okay. All right, okay.
Hey,
attempting to camp without a permit.
You're under arrest, sir. Take him to custody.
All right. I sense a little criminal activity going on, right?
Well, you're lucky. You've got all the implements of the crime.
I've been out of town. I'm enjoying.
So, any, did you get a ticket recently or not?
I get them once a day, usually.
Okay, today, for example, did you get one?
That was a couple of days ago.
What'd you get? For what?
Oh, riding a bike over the bridge and walking bridge to
You're under arrest again, as I said before.
I smoked a cigarette just before, the day before, on the beach.
Smoking a cigarette on the beach?
On the park.
Yeah, see, you keep doing this shit, man. What do you think you are, in America? Give it a break, man.
Couldn't find a dumpster to hide behind. Somebody else was there already.
And my apologies for the distorted tape. I'm not quite sure why it's distorting. Usually the tapes are much better. I have to research this a little. I did do an interesting... my thanks to Valerie Christie for doing a tape of the KPFA hour-long called Living Room show. It was about a week ago. It was a week ago today. It was a show where a number of activists and advocates spoke about homelessness and the laws against the homeless up in Berkeley. And it is Berkeley that they're talking about and not Santa Cruz, but the situation is not that much different. What I'm going to do is play a bit of that, and hopefully the quality of this tape is better. Here we go.
A lot more that are out there who are truly homeless, people who are doubled and tripled up, living with family or friends or...
This is Michael Stoops on the phone calling from Washington, D.C. He's the executive director or main activist with the National Coalition for the Homeless.
People paying huge rents in cheap motels across the country. So it's the tip of the iceberg. When you see someone with a sign or sitting on a corner, there's another 9 people who you don't see, and many of them are families and children, the elderly, veterans, etc.
Michael Stoops of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Paul Bowden, in fact, is here in the studio. And mostly you don't think of families with children anymore. You think of the people that you actually see on the streets, which are largely men that appear to be in need of lots of assistance besides just a shelter.
Well, and you know, that's sort of feeding off of what Michael was talking about. The irony here is...
This is Paul Bowden, formerly of the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, now with another group, I think, called RAP.
Instead of addressing poverty and refunding affordable housing and access to health care, we created a homeless program. And so all these different federal agencies have different definitions of what qualifies you as an applicant or as a client of a homeless program, as opposed to addressing poverty in the United States. And so each federal agency has a different definition of what makes you homeless, so that service providers then fill out forms that say, these is who I served, and they either qualify for funding from the federal government for serving those people, or they don't qualify, depending upon the definition that the federal agency is using. It's asinine. It is incredibly bureaucratic. It takes all humanity out of the game. And so we have...
waste money, I would think.
It's an incredible waste of money. The legacy of 20 years of the federal government's McKinney program to address homelessness is we've created this massive bureaucracy of the federal government's McKinney program to end homelessness. We haven't done anything to address poverty and to address the housing needs and the health care needs of people in this country. And so in the Department of Education, where they do head counts because all schools are paid by the head, they've documented 907,000 children that are in our public school system today that do not have a home. But then HUD, Housing and Urban Development, that oversees McKinney, says, oh, no. Us and the National Alliance and the Bush administration say there's 700,000 homeless people total throughout the whole country. Who do you believe? And then it becomes an argument and a debate and funded studies by Dennis Culhane and these other people that are out there making mint to study us. but not to address our needs and to verify which program is the most effective, which definition is the most accurate. And we have debates about how does somebody now qualify as being homeless instead of saying, how do we address poverty?
Paul Bowden with RAF, the Western Regional Advocacy Project in San Francisco. Tell me, Michael Stoops, on the phone with us again from the National Coalition on Homelessness. What you said when we spoke on the phone, that there were some small reasons for hope on the national level. Lay it on me.
Well, the McKinney-Vento Act is to be reauthorized this year, and we're pushing for expanding the definition that Paul Bowden talked about. We're pushing for increased dollars for the McKinney-Vento, but at the same time, they're cutting important entitlement programs, housing, food stamps, etc. We hope that the presidential, and we have the National Housing Trust Fund has been introduced in Congress and is moving slowly but surely through both houses. We also see some glimmer of hope by the candidates, and Hillary Clinton is scheduled to give a talk later on this week about income equality. So if we can get people to talk about it, and we can get promises, and we can elect someone who is going to focus on ending poverty in this country, that's the only glimmer of hope that I have here in Washington, D.C.
And, of course, John Edwards has long made has been a plank of his platform for many campaigns. But on the other hand, when everybody's running, they talk about health care, they talk about bringing the troops home, they talk about giving some more money to education, and they talk about doing something about housing and the homeless. But it seems to be over when the campaign is over.
Well, it's our responsibility to hold their feet to the fire to make sure that they, who's ever elected, that they hold true to their promises.
I'm really tired of this Michael Stoops rap. That's Michael Stoops, the National Coalition for the Homeless, which, you know, it's kind of a poverty pimp type organization. Much as I like Michael personally, I know him personally, and he's come out and tried to help people in Santa Cruz make presentations, and he does provide documentation and statistics. But the idea that these people you're electing, these frauds, are actually going to do something real, and that you can somehow, quote, hold their feet to the fire, what is that supposed to mean? And I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, we have Democrats elected. We're trying to get them to end the war in Iraq, and the result is they're continuing to fund the war in Iraq. The latest proposal is to propose that a sum of the troops leave by next November. They're retreating even from earlier positions that some of the troops leave by next April, which is a retreat from an earlier position that virtually all the troops leave by the end of this year that Murtha proposed 2 years ago. And, of course, it has nothing to do with the real position of the American public that all of the troops be out of there by next year. And there have been There was an optimistic proposal, and I'm skipping to the war in Iraq here because I think it has bearing on homelessness, and because it's a particular passion of mine, this criminal occupation of Iraq that our government is engaging in and that we're allowing to happen. I mean, we're spending our time doing other things rather than addressing it or trying to address it or raising our voices with our representatives in a meaningful way or blocking highways or whatever the heck, you know, might make some impact, or, you know, sleeping in at the post office, I don't know, camping out and, you know, in bivouacs in support of ending this war. The recent proposal that there be no military bases is actually a proposal that got a big majority. It got like 390 votes in the House of Representatives, something like that, and very few voted against it. But what it really meant was that no military bases will be in Iraq without the permission of the government. And since, of course, we set up the government, it was set up under a military occupation, even though there were elections, set up under military occupation and continues to be, and there's an active civil war and insurgency going on, they are, of course, highly dependent on American arms, this government, the Iraqi regime there. And the military bases will continue to stay there. And, in fact, we probably won't negotiate with any government that won't allow those bases to remain there. And that, of course, is one of the primary reasons we're there. So that's some of what's happening. I'm going to be talking more about Iraq later. I'll play a little bit more of this KPFA Hour, which has a few good points from the angry and articulate Paul Bowden. And I think Osha Newman, another Berkeley attorney activist, is on later. I actually get on the show for about 3 minutes, but you hear me for hours anyway, so it's not terribly new or relevant or exciting for regular listeners to this show. But it's really depressing to hear people who are... I mean, Michael Stoops' salary comes from his being this essentially homeless bureaucrat who, you know, he generates stats for the government and so forth. I mean, he's an advocate for homeless people, yes, but the kinds of recommendations he makes are not very persuasive. He wants more money under the Stuart McKinney Act, and you heard Paul Bowden talking about this. Instead of money going for a war on poverty, you have this breakdown into very, very individualized categories of homeless people, and of course more and more gets cut off. People are turned against each other, fighting for this. Different groups fight for the money. Sort of like different groups at city council fighting for tiny bits of the pie, instead of all of us coming together to demand what needs to be done on behalf of the community.
They restore the federal housing budget that Paul Bowden talked about, that what we had back in 1979. If we funded housing adequately, there would not be homeless people in this country. So we know what needs to be done. We simply don't have the resources, and we don't have the resources because the American people are not saying this is a priority that we want our local, state, and federal leaders to tackle. We've all grown accustomed to seeing live, visible homeless people living on our in our streets in downtown America. So we can point the finger, but we should also point the finger at ourselves, because we're all responsible for allowing poverty to continue in this country.
This is Michael Stoops, the Acting Executive Director of the National Coalition on Homelessness. And Michael, I thank you very kindly for spending some time with us. And for more information, people are highly recommended to go to the website www.nationalhomeless.org. Lots and lots of very useful and important information, including a whole big sheet on what you can do, and including volunteering at shelters, et cetera, to take some of that personal responsibility. And we bid farewell to you, Michael, but
okay.
We'll speak
to you very much
in the future. What Michael just said about people becoming accustomed, and this is where we get to one of the issues of the day. If you look at local newspapers, you can see homeless people being evicted. There's a story in Fresno, there's Santa Cruz, there's just all over Northern California. There are homeless people, and there are things that are being done about them. But what is being done about them? Here in Berkeley, there appears to be some measures that are being considered by the city council that would simply remove homeless people from Berkeley, and then people wouldn't have to be seeing them, which would be another way to solve the problem. And maybe we should. Do that, those facts and figures right now about what exactly is happening in Berkeley. Osha, can you do that?
I can do my best.
This is Osha Newman, attorney, artist, former police review commissioner, a person who oversees Citizens Police Review Board type group in Berkeley, who's been on Free Radio Santa Cruz and talked about these issues, and the very articulate writer who also writes for the newspaper Street Spirit that I talked about earlier, which, by the way, if you're looking for Street Spirit, you can find it in the public library, the main branch, or you can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or you can meander down to Ocean Street to the McDonald's area, where there's sometimes a vendor down there, sometimes a little tipsy, perhaps, on occasion, but vendoring away. Actually, I think they're pretty sober when they're out doing their vendoring. And you also have folks downtown on Pacific Avenue selling Street Spirit.
Yes, I mean, you put it, I think, rightly, that it's measures to remove homeless people from Berkeley, but of course you can't say that in a nice liberal city. So what do they call the measure that is now being used to this new, newest, latest version of an attack on homelessness? They call it the Public Commons for Everyone Initiative. That's what it was called. That's what they came up with. In terms of just the debasement of language, and the, you know, that this, we have to deal with this here in Berkeley with this kind of linguistic atrocity, this Orwellian atrocity, is really, really troubling, you know, just right off the bat. And this was a measure that was dreamed up by Merchants Associations of Telegraph Avenue and downtown, and those places are having problems. I mean, there's lots of reasons why a bookstore in Berkeley, Cody's Bookstore, closed. I mean, bookstores are having trouble all over the place. You can't get people to read books. You know, they buy them on Amazon and so on. But what is a very easy way to blame people, and that is to blame it on the homeless, and that's what they did. So they've got plenty of laws to deal with this, but you know, when they have to do something, they decide the first thing they think about is, well, we're going to pass some new law. So what this started off with, I mean, although it ended up being kind of slightly concealed, was an effort to pass a law against sitting on the sidewalk. That's what they really wanted. And the problem with all this stuff is national stuff is, you know, that is what it is. I mean, I think it's hopeless as long as, you know, we have this war. But cities don't have to go along with this sort of evil, narrow-minded kind of stuff. But when one city does it, then the other cities go and they say, oh, you know, they did it. They did it in Santa Cruz. That's a progressive city. They did it in Palo Alto. That's a progressive. We should do it in Berkeley. So, and how come they've got a law against sitting and we don't? So this is what they started.
And it's kind of an interesting point that Ocean Newman makes, that not only do these evil laws against poor people in Santa Cruz hurt us, but by letting them stand, by letting them be enforced, by remaining silent, by not resisting them, we give license to other cities, other downtown business associations that don't think any further than the bottom line, and even don't even think very clearly about that, since they're really scapegoating and not really dealing with real, you know, business problems in this respect. They're using the homeless as their excuse, or it represents their fear. We're letting this spread to other cities like a plague, like a cancer. I think the interesting thing is it doesn't work the opposite way. When large cities like Los Angeles and San Diego have decided under federal court pressure that they have to allow homeless people to sleep legally somewhere, you would think that progressive cities like Santa Cruz and Santa Barbara would follow suit. They have not. They have to be forced, dragged, embarrassed, kicking and screaming to do the right thing. And this shouldn't really surprise a lot of us because, you know, when you saw the civil rights changes, they didn't happen because everybody sat down and was real mellow and hugged each other and said, you know, that's a really great idea. Let's do that. No, it took power. It took power to change it. And that's what we're going to try to be organizing and encouraging people to assert, both people in houses and people who are houseless outside, by coming down to protests like this Coonerty protest, the protest against Vice Mayor Coonerty's preposterous and vicious positions against poor people on the city council. He's going to be mayor in 4 months, or in 5 months. In November, he'll be mayor unless he has a heart attack or there's a revolution or, you know, anything of that sort. So he's going to be the man in, you know, in with the public face of the city is going to be Ryan Coonerty's. And you know, it's whatever you think of his positions on other issues, and I don't think a lot of his positions on other issues, I got to tell you. I heard some at City Council on Tuesday night talking about the E3. It was very sad. His position on the sleeping ban is both, well, I think it's cowardly because he doesn't come out with a strong position, a clear position on it that explains to the community why he thinks the way he does. I think it is deceptive, furtive is a better word, because he's concealing the city attorney's own opinion about this issue, which we've not been able to get, but which he could move, and he might be rejected by the city council, but he could put on the table a motion that the city attorney reveal why the city is constitutional. Give the community the right to look over the city attorney's arguments and say, well, those are good arguments. It's a great idea to arrest people who are sleeping at night and give them $97 tickets or lock them up, you know, or drive them out of town. I mean, that's, you know, it's important for our business community to do that. You know, I mean, it might be, you know, otherwise, well, as Mike Rutkin says, have thousands of people, or he actually said millions of people coming to Santa Cruz. Or they might say otherwise. They might say, that's ridiculous. We got to find other solutions. Obviously, Los Angeles and San Diego, you know, have not, you know, gone under. Richmond changed its law. It was one of the few cities that did follow suit without a lawsuit on this. And I'm still waiting to get some reports from Richmond. Can't seem to find out what the heck is going on up there, except they have changed their law that now says you cannot arrest homeless people if the shelters are full. There's no place for people in the shelters. You can't do it. And that's the case every night this summer in Santa Cruz. From April 15th through November 15th, there are no shelter spaces. And throughout the winter, for the overwhelming majority of homeless people, there are no shelter spaces. It's 160 spaces. There's space for 1,500 to 2,000 people. It's really simple arithmetic. And arithmetic that I keep bringing before the city council. I did it on Tuesday night again. You, the Service Employees International Union, the great liberal union, and, you know, some of the SEIU people are sympathetic. Others were voted against the sleeping ban. Or they were SEIU folk to the prejudices of their own anti-homeless park workers, like Ranger John Wallace. We had a debate on this subject, I think it was 2 years ago, that was in the Union Hall. Madrigal sponsored it, or didn't sponsor it. He allowed it to happen, and he didn't. I think it was before he was elected, even. It was 3 years ago. Tony Madrigal, city council member, and he was the in a position of the union in which he was seriously criticized by more active union members as being kind of a do-nothing and a sellout. That's how he was described by activists like Steve Argue, you know, former free radio broadcaster and homeless activist and sometimes street spirit salesperson. Also a supporter of a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal, but that's another story. So I pause in the middle of Ocean Newman's speech here, his talking on the air a week ago at KPFA. And by the way, if you want to download this, just go to the kpfa.org website and look up The Living Room, and you'll be able to go to last week's show. That'll be the July 19th show, I guess, and you'll be able to hear the whole show in its entirety, I believe. So it's actually online. That's one of the reasons I didn't play it. But I'm getting a little tired of listening to my own tapes play so badly, so I thought I'd give you a clearer tape. Here in Santa Cruz, we've gotten some new statistics about the sleeping ban. I actually made a request to the police department, which they responded to in a timely manner, to their credit. I requested a listing of all sleeping tickets from January 1st through June, and I found that they had doubled from last year. Last year, during a six-month period that was actually more in the summer, so there actually would be more sleeping ban tickets probably, they issued 168 tickets, although if you add Ranger Wallace's tickets to those, it's over 300. This year, in the six-month period from January to June, they've issued 308 tickets. And if you add Wallace's beefed-up Parks and Rec tickets to this, well, I can't tell you what the figure is going to be, but last year alone, Ranger Wallace, operating single-handedly, gave out more citations than the entire police department. He gave out more than 168 citations. He gave out about 200 or something, 250, I'm not sure. We have them, actually. We went through the records. And this year, he has three new park rangers and four CSOs, or at least three, it's either four CSOs or three CSOs and Sergeant Warren Berry to help beat the bushes to drive the homeless out. Now, I had heard of a surge, our own anti-homeless surge, as distinguished from President Bush's murderous surge in Iraq, the anti-homeless surge of ticketing after the Armory closed in mid-April, and I went to the Parks and Rec Department along with a couple of other homeless activists to see if Parks and Rec were issuing more tickets, and they weren't. And I wanted to clarify that. I commanded Ranger Wallace, who was there, letting us look through the records, as he has to under the public records requests that any citizen can make. However, I suspect now, I don't know, this is a hypothesis, that Ranger Wallace has had his hands full training new Rangers, so he hasn't had time to go out and issue a lot of tickets, but that most of the tickets, that the, there was a huge surge, and it was not from Ranger Wallace's hands, it was from the police department, and they weren't even in the Poganip, and probably there were tickets also being issued in the Poganip, or at least now I suspect there are tickets being issued in the Poganip. Through the beefed-up Ranger force, although I'm not sure how many Rangers are currently fully trained and operational and whether the Warren Berry Bluebelly squad is out there terrorizing homeless people and marking homeless tents for destruction so that we can have a pure Poganip without homeless tents. And this kind of fanatic mentality... You see on the front pages of the Chronicle as well. If you look at yesterday's Chronicle, supervisor calls mayor deaf to park problems. And here's a right-wing supervisor, Ross Micarimi, who's talking about homeless encampments and intravenous drug use in Golden Gate Park. And this is Golden Gate Park, of course, is a huge park up in San Francisco where a lot of homeless people hide and try to sleep and camp. It's not like it's a sort of a fun camp where a bunch of drug abusers can go shoot up. I'm sure that people do that, but it's really a place where people survive. And some of them do it, and some of them do shoot up. And a lot of people go shoot up at home. The question is, what kind of shelter, what kind of options do people have in San Francisco? And the answer is zilch, or very little. You have about 10,000 to 13,000 homeless people, and you have less than half that number of emergency shelter space, which is markedly unsafe. At least that's been my impression talking to the Coalition on Homelessness. But not a word about this appears in the Chronicle scare stories of today and yesterday. Instead, we get headlines about essentially to pressure an already right-wing mayor, Gavin Newsom, right-wing on homeless issues, to act even more repressively, similar to what's been happening, what's happened in Berkeley, with Mayor Tom Bates, and of course what's happened with our phony baloney Smiley Riley mayor, Emily Riley, who came to power promising to make it legal for homeless people to sleep legally somewhere. She lied, or let's be generous, she changed her mind when she was in power and saw it was not a possibility. Actually, quite it was a possibility. She was a swing vote. She could have done it in the first 2 years of her councilship. Council personship when she was a council member, and that was in 2000 and 2001, or actually 2001 and 2002. There was a majority on the council to do it. She wouldn't do it. So the point of all this is there is a looks like a doubling of ticketing against homeless people for sleeping. So it's all the more important if you think basic human rights are not just something to talk about in the Sudan or in Palestine or in Iraq, you know, or elsewhere in the world. If you think human rights is something that, you know, need to be addressed here right down the block, then you have to do something about it. And everybody, of course, will decide what they want to do or what they won't do, what they have time to do, what they're good at doing, and what they enjoy doing as well. But there are people who are dying because of what we are doing and what we're not doing. They're dying, of course, over in Baghdad and Iraq. They're getting murdered over there. But here, you know, the average life expectancy of a homeless person is much shorter, not the least because people are harassed and harried, and you have a hostile environment where a basic human right recognized by the UN... Sleep deprivation is also considered to be torture under the Geneva Conventions, is not acknowledged in Santa Cruz. It's time we did something. If you want to do something or you think you want to help out with this, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can call City Council if you want. You know, that's if you don't feel like you can do anything else, call them up, 420-5020. They're on vacation, of course, but they are supposed to be listening to their messages. 420-5020, and tell them to end the sleeping ban and take some action to guarantee emergency campground facilities for homeless people who need to sleep safely in groups or who want to sleep safely off by their lonesome. We're not talking about anywhere and everywhere. We're talking about some somewheres. And the problem is people say, yes, yes, but where? There is no place for them. Well, then you make some places. You prioritize some places. There, homeless groups have for years proposed places, parking lots that are vacant at night. Police department parking lot is vacant at night and quite safe. County parking lot is vacant at night and quite safe. There could be a gone by dawn deal where people go in there, park their vehicles and leave. Porta potties could be set up. We have a cold, cruel, oblivious mentality. We have a very short-sighted mentality in Santa Cruz. And it's really sad. And it's also something I think makes a lot of us angry, and properly so. So you can bring your good humor and your anger down to the Bookshop Santa Cruz and ask Vice Mayor Coonerty what the heck's going on here. You know, we're doing some music, we'll be doing some singing, we'll be doing some munching, who knows, some skits. I may be giving a speech or two. I've got a new flyer out which talks about how to deal with the police. We may do a little improvisation as to how to deal with a police officer if they come upon you in the night. There's a great skit that was done by the Know Your Rights Jason and Rico duo downtown on Pacific Avenue. And I've talked about it a little bit here on the air. The main deal, you know, they came on to the crowd as police officers, and they kind of role modeled and showed you what to do. They role played how to deal with police encounters if you want to retain your rights and not get yourself into deeper trouble, and how to essentially keep the police in the positions they need to be on, which is people who are supposedly limiting their intrusions into your life to concerns with public health and safety, not using their power and their position as an opportunity to expand into all kinds of other arenas and to engage in class war as a sort of the private security goon squads of the merchants, which unfortunately is what we have in a lot of cities, and Santa Cruz is one of them. Here's a little more of Osha Newman, who I think is worth listening to.
They ran into a whole flak storm of opposition from homeless people, from people organized and so on. And they began to kind of pull back, and they whittled it down, and they decided, well, they wouldn't go for that. And they came up with a whole bunch of other stuff. But and in the end, in June 12th, they passed, actually, it's kind of tragic, unanimously, this measure that had all kinds of sort of, you know, weird, you know, unimportant stuff, like they're, you know, they want to have a law that makes it an infraction to poop and pee on the sidewalk. Like, people are not, you know, as if people are pooping and peeing on the sidewalk now because there isn't enough law. There are laws against it. They wanted to, you know, signage to toilets that don't exist, that are not open and so on. But the really bad thing that they did was they, and this is, maybe we got something to blame for this, because
OSHA's talking about the Berkeley City Council under Mayor Bates and its actions about a month ago, which I talked about on this show as well.
What we were saying when they were...
We advocates.
What we were saying when they said, well, we need these new laws. We said, hey, look, you want to harass the homeless people out of Berkeley, you've got plenty of laws right now. And in fact, it's actually happening. So what they ended up doing is they ended up listing all these laws, and they passed a resolution saying that the police are supposed to enforce all of these existing laws. And they listed these laws, and, you know, there's this famous quote from Anatole France, you know, that the law in its majestic equality forbids the rich and the poor to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread. And so what are the laws that they're enforcing, and who's going to get them before? It's those laws that only affect homeless people, like a law, for example, against unauthorized possession of a shopping cart. So how many people in houses
who have a place are carrying their possessions around in shopping carts. You know, we know what this is about. And in fact, it's happening right now. I mean, if you go on Telegraph Avenue now, or if you go on Shattuck Avenue, there are very, very few people there. They are really coming down and pushing. But I'm going to be in court at 3:30 this afternoon for a 62-year-old woman with her body is riddled with cancer. She's in chronic pain. Her spine is deteriorated. She's labeled a competent schizophrenic. She's bipolar. She has sleep apnea, and on and on and on. And she was sleeping in a doorway of a closed, abandoned business on University Avenue. And the officer came up at 12:30 in the morning, and she was lying there. It was a somewhat deep doorway, so she was safe. Didn't feel it. A homeless woman was murdered on University Avenue in 2000. I mean, just brutally beaten to death. I mean, the DA said they used her head as a soccer ball. 45-year-old woman just down the street from where this woman was, and the officer, you know, kicked her out, cited her for trespassing. She said, "Well, can I have a warning?" The officer said, "No, I forgot to say she's blind. She's legally blind and couldn't see the trespass sign." So that's what we're dealing with in Berkeley. And it's really sad to me.
Ocean Newman, attorney for homeless folks here in Berkeley, longtime advocate for the downtrodden, and the homeless folks in Berkeley, as other places, are certainly in that population. In fact, let me ask Ben Fulcher, who's with us, who describes himself as a Berkeley street person. Ben, what OSHA was describing, what he sees as someone who, a person who experiences this stuff might come to for help, describe for us what it's like just sort of on a regular basis for you.
Well, it's difficult to, you know, use retrospect. From a period of 11 years when I lived on the streets constantly, sleeping in the doorways, begging for food. I never stole, and I did not have an alcohol habit. But once you're down on the street, and people get there for men, everybody has a different story. But when you're there, you're there, and it's almost impossible to get off. There's no central office where anyone can go to say, "I need help," you know, and get it. You have to fill out papers, wait 80, 90 days for a doctor's appointment. There's no streamlining of services. The police are constantly harassing us. Even if you're former homeless, you will still be harassed by the same policemen who know who you are. And the stigma, and it is a stigma that is very deeply embedded. And we can't get jobs. An employer looks at you and say, "Oh, we can't use you because you've been homeless. You know, you don't have any skills, you're stupid, there's something wrong with you." And I have been told that to my face. And the police harassment is always there.
What does that mean, police harassment?
Well, if they find you sleeping, they will move you and they will follow you. And they'll check up on you every 15 to 20 minutes to be sure you do not sit down at night and go to sleep. They will constantly do it. And they say, "Yeah, sorry, I'm just doing my job. We've had a complaint." You ask them where the complaint come with. They said, "You know, get a lawyer." And I thank God we have local lawyers like that. But not all the homeless are dirty, stinky, smelly, bearded people. And like the gentleman from the coalition was saying, that a lot of the homeless people stay under covers out of fear of being robbed by the street thugs, and there are plenty of those out there. And when we band together, the police say, "No, you can't do that." They set us up for being picked off one by one by either you know, people who prey on us, or they just do it out of what they consider to be a community spirit.
So I'm assuming that there are no way enough beds in whatever shelters exist.
No. The last I heard, there was a need for at least 10,000 beds just in Alameda County. That may have changed in 2 or 3 years, but I don't think the figures are all that much different. And the service providers who are out there do a magnificent job, but they are overwhelmed. They simply don't have what they need to do with what they have, you know, to what they look out every morning. I've eaten at the quarter meal in Berkeley several times, and in the past they have had to turn people away because of, you know, there's simply too many people.
Not enough food for the number of people that are hungry.
And there are a lot of programs, and the providers do what they can, but it's a very small number that are actually reached. And the federal figures on homelessness are absolute, you know, they're fantasy. That's a right-wing fantasy.
It's Ben Fulcher, who has spent many the day, week, month, and year on the street and is familiar with what happens there. And I want to ask Lydia Gans, who works with Food Not Bombs. Food Not Bombs is one of those wonderful service provider volunteer organizations that is dedicated to bringing food to people that need food. They catered the Cop Watch conference at Laney College this weekend, and it was incredibly great food, I must say, and free food for everybody who was there. Lydia, talk about Food Not Bombs' work with the homeless and the difficulties you've had.
Well, thank you for the compliment about it.
And Lydia will hopefully be talking about that this weekend when I replay this on Sunday, or play it on Sunday. If you want to hear it before Sunday, you can go to www.kpfa.org and check out the Living Room, the show that comes on every Thursday at noon, Chris Welch's show. We have about 8 or 9 minutes left in the show before Uncle Dennis comes rolling in. Here's a kind of a shift of focus. Again, just sort of to summarize for those who haven't been following the entire show, just tuned in, we've gotten released new figures from the police department that show nearly a doubling of the citation rate from last year for survival, for homeless sleeping, even though there's no legal place for homeless people to sleep, even though the courts have decided that such behavior by police is cruel and unusual punishment, even though we have supposedly a civil libertarian, Ryan Coonerty, on the city council. So that new information is interesting and useful. If you go to indiebay.org, you can get some more information as well. That's a useful website to go to where I often post articles, and hopefully we'll be posting some more. I think Linda Lemaster has written a story, which she may not have posted yet, but I think she will soon, or hopefully she will soon, about Craig Canada's trial, his trial, successful trial, using the necessity defense to say, no, you can't criminalize me for sleeping at night, particularly, but his particular case because of the medical marijuana situation. On the medical marijuana front, I did get a response, not the response I needed, but a response from Leslie Cook, who is our city clerk, around the issues that you may have heard me talking about, Measure K. That's the measure that lets us supposedly be free from police harassment in our homes. This is actually around recreational marijuana or any kind of marijuana. If you are smoking a joint at home, this should be the lowest priority for the police department. Any kind of use, distribution, sales, or possession at home on private property if you're over 21 is none of the city's business. It's actually none of the city's business, period. Any kind of drug use, provided you're not, you know, engaging in abuse of other people and or corrupting minors or whatever. I mean, this is, of course, an issue that I brought up before as well. But the voters voted by 63-64% last year to tell the city, in spite of the city council's refusal to endorse this measure, in spite of Ed Porter's vehement opposition to this measure, in spite of the city attorney's attempt to derail the measure, and in spite of the city voters voted for it 64%. What did the city do? Rather than have the oversight committee, which was supposed to be set up to make sure that the police was doing this, that's documenting the fact that it's recreational marijuana busts, it's marijuana busts, period, were not being done as a high priority, but as the lowest priority. Instead of agreeing to do this, the police department, through the city attorney, actually the city attorney himself, sued the people who had put this measure on the ballot, and it's still going to court. I sought these public records to find out what's going on here. What kind of dialogue is happening between the city attorney and the police department and the city manager that's actually cooking up this lawsuit. Well, lo and behold, they haven't got any information on that. All they have is information is an agenda of a meeting of the Measure K committee, which had no members because they hadn't gotten members because council members had refused to appoint them. And still had they delayed further. They finally have a potential quorum. Anita Henry is one of the members of the Measure K Oversight Committee, and there are three others. There's still three vacancies. If you'd like to be on the Measure K Committee, 420-5020. Again, it's of limited use, but if you see it as a stepping stone to mobilizing the community rather than, you know, scratching the backs of city council members, then it could be a useful position to be in. Anyway, I talked to Leslie Cook today and said, Leslie, I need to see the correspondence between the city attorney and the city manager and city council members and the police department around their decision to sue and stop this oversight commission from proceeding. And she said, oh, I didn't know you wanted that, even though it was quite clear, I think, in my... anyway, so she's looking for that information now. That's sort of a brief update. There is a war in Iraq. There is an ongoing system of torture and shredding of the Constitution, which has become accepted by the Congress and, unfortunately, by the community, too. Although, I guess it wouldn't be so accepted if it were happening to your next-door neighbor or your children. But since it's not, and it's happening to people relatively far away, you can't hear their screams in Guantanamo. You can't hear their screams in the concentration camps of Eastern Europe, even though they're funded with your money. Here is an interesting story. Bush's torture ban is full of loopholes. The president has issued an executive order to stop the CIA from using torture, but the ban is unenforceable. The executive order was to allow the CIA to use everything, but they're not calling it torture. Here's what's the story is by David Cole, and it's on the Counterpunch website. Once upon a time, a U.S. official's condemnation of torture was a statement of moral principle. Today, it is an opportunity for obfuscation. We have learned that when President Bush says we don't torture, it's important to read the fine print. And also, of course, important to answer the telephone. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I have a question. I was listening to this radio station a couple days ago, and you were talking about an event, which I thought you said was going to be at UCSC this weekend.
Okay, what you need to do is you need to call, because I don't know about this, you know. I'm not the person who was here 3 or 4 days ago. We all kind of have a rotating group. If you want to call the, what we call the Free Radio voicemail, it's 427-4523. Give them a call and leave a message there, and they'll probably get back to you.
427-4523.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. So it was again, it's important to read the fine print, so it was again on July 20th when Bush issued a long-awaited executive order purporting to regulate interrogation tactics used by the CIA in the, quote, war on terror. And I can't really get too far into this except to say that this prohibits the CIA from using torture and cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, sexual abuse, denigration of religion, and serious acts of violence. However, torture is defined to permit the use of sexual abuse, stress positions, injecting suspects with intravenous fluids until they urinate themselves, prolonged sleep deprivation, hello Santa Cruz, exposure to extreme heat and cold, and waterboarding, i.e. simulated drowning. So we still got the torture, and now it's being asserted in the face of congressional, even the McCain guy who wants to send more troops to Iraq supposedly took a moral stand against torture. Well, we need a moral stand against torture locally, sleep deprivation locally. And I hope you'll be showing up 2 o'clock on Sunday at in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz or on August 12th at City Hall at night to support the rights of people to do what they need to do, which is sleep legally somewhere. So I'm going to roll now, and I will play a bit of, well, this is an old CD from almost a decade ago. Actually, it's a little more recent, and it's got some old favorites. I hope that you will come back again on Sunday. There is also a human rights when the show comes back at 9:30 in the morning. I'll be here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And you can also go to the Human Rights Organization meeting if you're interested on Saturday. That meets 2 o'clock. It's at the Firefly Cafe, which is, I think it's 131 Front Street, if I'm not mistaken. I'll be talking on Sunday a bit about the E3 playoffs, though it's a little bit like a wake. So I don't know what to... That's one of the reasons I didn't talk about it a lot. You can go to the Sentinel website and read the forums, almost overwhelmingly in favor of what the city council refused to do, which is allow a business, this particular business, to stay open, and they didn't do it. We'll be talking about that, and I'll see you then. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Off air, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you got anything you want to pass on or if you have any questions.
Santa Cruz, California, a university and beach town, one of America's most liberal cities, now has the toughest panhandling ordinance in California. Sitting on downtown sidewalks, using profane language, panhandling while drunk, or lying about how the money will be spent, all illegal.
The people are going to use fear and intimidation to try to hassle money out of other people. We're going to say, no, that's not allowed.
A self-proclaimed socialist led the crackdown.
They have some sense of entitlement. I don't know where they get it from. That somehow the city owes them. Give us your parks. Give us some place to stay, like we owe them a place to survive.
At the same time, the city does fund a wide range of services for the homeless. And it's not just Santa Cruz. Cities all over the U.S. are finding themselves fed up. They've run out of patience. Liberal cities like San Francisco, where police break up soup kitchens operated by the homeless activist group Food Not Bombs for operating without a permit.
I was convicted of serving soup at the Civic Center Plaza in front of City Hall and sentenced to 2 months in jail.
Next week, Santa Monica will adopt new laws banning aggressive solicitation.
People are beginning to say, we've got to grab hold of something and claim it and say, you know, this is going to be the way we're going to save our cities. The sad part is this is the absolute wrong way to do it, that we need to support the people in the inner cities, help them get the jobs and housing and health care they need, or the problem's going to get much worse.
Reporter John Robinson went undercover as a panhandler for a newspaper story.
More than one person spit at my feet.
Americans have always been charitable, but there seems to be little of that feeling left for people who, instead of asking for help, demand it.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 www.freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Dennis, and welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s. And we've got a real special show for you tonight. I'm actually turning the studio over to my son and his friends, who have brought in a few pounds of vinyl that they're going to play for you. And while they're getting all set up, let's listen to some Cream. And tonight's brew of the week is Stone Mill Pale Ale from Green Valley Brewing Company in New Hampshire, Merrimack, New Hampshire. So we're going to be opening that up. Of course, my son won't be participating in the drinking, but we will be having a good time. So stay tuned to Free Radio. Let's listen to some Cream.
Tired starving. watch a while. See, he never smiled. Broken home, father gone, mama tired. So is all alone.